and welcome to Do the Right Thing, your weekly writing prompt podcast. I'm Alexandra.
And I'm Jarvis.
Jarvis and I are aspiring writers with one simple problem. We never actually took the time to sit down and write.
Exactly. So, to solve that issue, we are issuing a challenge. Each week, you sit down and write a complete short story using three or four randomly generated words.
Then, we come on the podcast, we read a story, we talk about what we learned in reading it, and then we talk about all the wonderful stories sent in by you listeners.
We're simply here to help you do the right thing.
Doof Media, PRODUCTION. Was that right? I think it was right.
Yeah, it was right enough.
I think it was 100% right, actually.
I would say 95, but only because I'm cynical.
Okay. 95% of those letters, out of the 20 letters there, one was wrong.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Naturally.
So this is a podcast where we talk about stuff. We've spent a lot of time in before we got to this section talking about random things. I did want to talk about another thing eventually, Jarvis, with you in particular, of just like, so, you know, I've transed my gender, right?
Yeah, you've gone and transed it.
I trans it. I hit the button. And as some time living this way, it's just given me a lot of perspectives, you know, living on both sides of the ocean, street, river. I don't know. It's given me a lot of perspective on things. And one is the different perspective on sex is very interesting. Of, like, the way that maleness constructs it is that it's this thing that must be taken to prove your worth, and if you are not having this, then you are no longer worthy. And that's why incels get the whole thing about, like, it is so unfair that these women are giving the sex to the Chad mans
and not me
because I deserve to be worthy, right? I deserve to have worth. And obviously I never articulated that, but that, like, is something that gets drilled into you, basically, or pushed into you just by the ambiance of society. But now I'm on the other side, and I'm just like, hey, actually, it doesn't matter, though. None of that matters, actually. Please relax. Like, it doesn't matter whether you get it or not, actually.
Would you say that the deeper issue is that we put such a importance when it comes to self-work and self-worth in the relation of sex, at least within men?
At least within men, yeah. I mean, it is a thing with women, too, but it's the other way. It's like, if you give it out, then you're worth less, right?
Yeah.
But now with a sexually liberated sort of consciousness, it's a very different where, it, like, yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, if I want to give it to the Chad man, I will, because it's fun. I don't care. Like, it doesn't...
Yeah.
He's not actually becoming more worthy because of it. Like, I don't know. I was hanging out with my friend, and their roommate is a total dick. But he's good-looking. And I was just like, it would be funny if I slept with him and then made fun of him afterwards. I think that would be a lot of fun, and I think it would be really funny.
So you're just gonna psychologically torment this dude?
No, he totally deserves it, though. He completely deserves it. And, like, I'm not gonna be, like, breaking his heart or something. I'm just saying I'm gonna get my rocks off, and he's gonna have a good time, and then I'm gonna talk shit about him because he's funny to talk shit about. Trust me when I say this guy deserves it. Like, I will say, it is rare for me just to get gender affirmation from random people, but the way he talked down to me definitely made me feel like a woman. So,
oh,
it was ridiculous.
That's great.
God, like,
you finally
he's just
did
like,
it.
He called my friend stupid for being an anarchist. Like, oh, is it just like out of hand? It's like, no, dude, that's not that simple. Like, he's just like, communism has, like, never worked, but, like, I am a socialist, I'm not pro-capitalism, but, like, communism's never, ever worked. And I'm just like, that's just, you're not, okay, that's fine. Look, I just, I don't know. It's not all political, but he's just like, I mean, this guy dropped out and I graduated and my degrees both have to do with stuff relative to those things. And he's just like out of hand dismissing all of my knowledge. And I think that's the mansplaining happening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, I guess. I was wearing a skirt, which does mean that I'm a dum-dum that needs to be talked down to, so.
Of course, you know. Yeah.
Anyway, it's fun to talk shit about him, and it would be also fun to have some fun. That's yeah. My point with that.
So fuck him, and then make him feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, not like to his face. I mean, maybe a little bit to his face. Maybe in the other room, and he can hear it.
Yeah, yeah. But you want to cause this person so much pain that you're like, you know what? Fuck it. I will sex him and then make fun of him.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine.
Damn.
So my point with all that
scorned.
Is that like, I'm not giving him something that's going to make him worth more of anything. It's not, there's no giving involved. It's just like a kind of hanging out, you know? Like, it doesn't mean more than that. So.
But I will say that even though you're not, quote unquote, giving him more worth, he's going to give himself more worth.
Yeah, and then I'm going to make fun of him, thus, so it doesn't really matter.
But either way, it's going to boost his ego, because you know, he's going to say, well, I still fuck, though, right?
You know? That's the thing, though. It's like, I don't know. Maybe for himself, sure, but I don't care, you know? Like, I don't care that, like, I know what his worth is, and it has not increased after that. Like, you know what I mean?
True. Yes.
So.
Interesting.
Anyway, hopefully that's not TMI. Maybe I'll keep that in a Doof After Dark. We'll see.
Yes, a great 5-minute Doof After Dark
episode. Talking about the sex best perspective.
Sex in the city.
The perspective.
Her perspective?
What are the words this week, Travis?
The words for this week are, you know what, thank you so much for asking. You know, a lot of people don't really ask how I am, you know, what I'm doing. So,
do you want to talk about how you're doing and stuff?
No, actually, I don't, in fact.
Okay.
But the words for this week were enemy, article, cassette, and painter.
Fun stuff. I don't really have any words to say about these words. I will say, personally, some more story time for myself. Do want to get back into writing. I did do some more editing of that story. It just never came to be presentable. But in my defense, the ADHD medicine I was being given that I had just switched to made me very depressed, and that made writing things a lot more difficult. Which I then stopped and then went back on the old one, and the old one was like still a little bit rough. The day before yesterday, I had my appointment with my doc, and I got prescribed, guess what? Vyvanse! So, like, woo! Which is an actual, like, effective ADHD medication. Like, right up there with Adderall. Apparently smoother than Adderall. I didn't know that. So I'm hoping that I'll actually be able to be motivated enough to actually get things done, which would be very, very cool.
Yeah, and I'm hoping so. Also, and I think you will. I mean, recently you've definitely been on the ticket on the button, really, really getting shit done. So this hopefully can just give you a double boost, plus one.
Become a god, as it were,
a god king,
a god king. Okay, what story are we reading this week?
So this week we are reading a story by Sarah Penguin, which is Family Bound by Blood, Leech Goddess Series Part 4.
So this is part of Sarah Penguin's series with the Goddess of Harvest that is actually controlled by a Leech Goddess, which is quite fun. These two priestesses escaped being killed by some holy Havel knights. And now we get this story. So I'll start reading. She sat on one end of the corner bench, on one of the black cushions. The room was plain-looking, white walls and white stone tile floor. Her brother was not known for his decoration skills, after all. He sat on the other end of the corner bench. He leaned back with one arm on the back, his feet resting on the table in front of the bench, which had two cups on it. He wore only a pair of shorts, always willing to show off his muscular physique with a lack of clothes. His free hand was stroking his short black beard, the same color as his hair. His gaze was transfixed on the only thing of interest, the combat arena in the middle of the room. The square area was surrounded by rope. Two men in shorts, one with short blonde hair, the other with short brown hair, fought. Both covered in blood and sweat, knuckles already stripped of skin as they traded blows. Standing just outside the ring was a woman with short blonde hair who had the same style of shorts on as everyone else. The winner of the previous fight. She had bandages wrapped around her chest as a makeshift top. The extra article of clothes made her the most dressed person in the room, as leeches had no need for clothes. "Look at the way they move, each muscle constricting as they strike. Each punch is a fluid motion like a dancer, twisting as they strike for more power. Their bodies can't tell the difference between a fight for survival and a game of sport," her brother excitedly commented as the fight went on. "Have you ever heard a sound as thrilling as a knee striking ribs before? Just watch how they move. Like a painter, their fist is their brush, the enemy's blood their paint, and the floor their canvas. Even with each hit they take, they keep going, refusing to stop no matter how much it hurts, until they cannot move at all. Marvelous creatures humans are." With an uppercut to the face, the blonde fell backwards, along with a gush of blood from his face, and an almost inhuman groan. Her brother snapped his fingers, declaring the fight over, and pointed at the space on the bench between him and her. The winner of the brawl, and the woman, grabbed the loser by the arms and dragged him over, dumping him. "My baby sister Hiru would like to speak to me alone," her brother commanded. "Go wait for me in my bedchamber, and don't wash the sweat and blood off while you wait." "Yes, Lord Kalgor," the pair spoke in almost perfect unison. They walked away, and she couldn't see them due to her size and the bench blocking her view, but she heard the wooden door slam shut. She moved faster than any leech could as she used her suckers to latch onto and crawl up the man who was still dazed and groaning. She felt his skin part as she pushed her proboscis into his neck. The sweet nectar flowed from his wound, and she felt the exhilaration of the feed, an ecstasy beyond anything mortals could dream. With each gulp, she felt the magic flowing around her, appearing as stars of every color behind her eyes. It begged to be used, unleashed on the world, and she obliged it, pushing out with it into his body, across his nervous system. Inch by inch, she flowed into him and made his body hers. As the magic reached his nose and his ribs, she felt the wave of pain from the beating he took, something her brother did intentionally. One of his pranks, as he liked to call it. Once the magic had touched every part of him, it was like his body was her own and she had always controlled it. Control over male humans always came with a feeling of wrongness. The male appendage and other maleness always felt like they were misplaced, a feeling she never got controlling a female human. She didn't really understand why it was like that, seeing as she had both an egg sac and the ability to fertilize the eggs of others, not that she would ever sully herself to making demigods like some others would. She kept sucking the blood from her host and kept using the magic to maintain control. Humans could normally only last about half a day until she wore them out, and took a break when they collapsed from exhaustion. Gods could last much longer due to their immortality. She had even controlled her brother for 50 years. It had been hell having to deal with a body that screamed it was wrong at her for that time. The only respite she got was when he was dead. He would revive after a time, but dying in battle would make him revive sooner. The more violent and bloody, the better for him. With the caveat that the battle would have to end before the revival started. But he eventually learned his lesson and never called her little brother again. Khal Gor grabbed the two cups from the table and offered her one. Soldiers going off to war have the best alcohol. No offerings like the please let me live kind. She took the cup and drank from it. She couldn't taste it, but could feel the pleasure resonance in the body, so it was really a good drink. Just another prank from her dear old brother. She didn't intend to control this host long enough for the alcohol to reach his blood and get drunk from him. I have provided drinks and entertainment. Now the formalities are over. What brings you to my humble abode, my darling baby sister? He said. Any excuse to rub in her sighs. The next time you start a war between humans, I would like to give the weapons they use my blessing and harvest the blood. Seeing as you are interested in the fight and not the spoils, it would be a waste otherwise. As we are family, I thought it would be polite to talk to you first, she explained. What happened to that goddess you were having fun with? Mevia, was it? Thought you had her under control in a village of her followers to drink from? He took a sip from his cup after he spoke. Her brother Havel sent his knights to ruin my fun. What is strange is that he was off on one of his great purges and hadn't spoken to her in 5 years. I am curious how he knew what I was up to. She kept the eyes she controlled looking at her brother, unblinking. I would hope you're not suggesting I had anything to do with it. Oh, sister of mine, he said, too defensively. Just thinking out loud, she said. Well, if you want some blood, I'm sure that will be all right. You can play with my toys. We are siblings, so sharing is what we do, right? You play with mine, and I get to play with yours. What are you planning? Nothing! How could I be planning anything? I had no idea your goddess plan was not still happening. I just think I should get to play with your toys in the future if you need to use them for something, he said. She didn't believe him. Fine, she agreed tentatively. One of your priestesses. She was the daughter of a duke. Then everyone found out her mother was getting it on with both him and the king at the same time, right? He asked. She raised the eyebrow of her host. What does that have to do with anything? Well, if the king is too busy with his vassal wives instead of ruling, then with the right push, a bunch of angry vassals turns into a civil war. I get my fighting and you get your blood. Win-win, he explained. I don't care how you do it. The fighting is your domain, not mine. Before you go, just one more thing. He reached to the table and grabbed a silver bell that hadn't existed until he touched it, and rang it. No sound came out. A moment later, the door opened and one of the servants stood, silently waiting for an order. James, I would like you to fight a round with my sister. A friendly match, mind you. Don't hurt her. Well, don't hurt her much. Khal Gor turned to face her. I want to see how you play with my toys first. Make sure you won't break them. Doesn't matter if you win or lose. She stood up and cracked her knuckles. Why am I not surprised you find a simple conversation boring without a fight going on? Let's just get this over with.
Well, all right. Yeah, I really do like this intro. I love how we get a look at this Lord Khal Gor character. And I like the description of exactly how they are drinking this blood. I thought that was a really nice section, seeing how it is sort of like a shot of ecstasy for them. So I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, what I like is the characterization of... Lord Khal Gor, the Ares character. I like how he's sort of characterized not just like an angry brute, but also, you know, interested in the beauty of war as well. Mm-hmm. Of course the stuff with the leechness of the goddess is interesting as well. I didn't realize that she was a leech until halfway through when she went in and started drinking the blood, although I understand that there was like hints of it before about her being small, but yeah, it's a very gross form for a goddess to take. I do wonder what all their relations are, right? Because this goddess of the harvest, it seemed like Lord Kalgor wasn't like super familiar with her. Like, sounds like almost like a far off cousin rather than like a sibling. but these two, the leech goddess and Kalgor, are directly related, which I thought was interesting.
That was pretty interesting how we are getting a bit more about the relations while there still being plenty of questions. And I feel that the relations are going to probably play a bigger part later when it comes to how people really end up aligning. Also within this piece, I do like how there is some pretty decent action here. I feel that the pacing of this, even though it is pretty expedient, it is working pretty decently to start to build bits of tension that I feel in the next entry will probably be explored a lot more.
I like the fight between the two, I think, was really well done, where it's just we get shown the fight about in media res, we get a summary of how it's been going, right, these knuckles being skinned already, and we just get to the important part, right, the trading the blows, and then uppercut, bleeding face down on the ground. It was I think very like efficiently told, and I think it's a great example of how you can do the short action between characters. Wow. That you don't need like the long term, like, it, you know, it's different if the entire story is action, right? And when you do like a longer thing like that, it actually is mostly little exchanges like this, right? Because you have to basically show one scene and another, right? So I thought that this was like really good practice for that.
Yeah, no, it is a really, really great practice for that. And I think, like, definitely starting the story within the action was a really great choice. Especially when it comes to short stories, it's a lot about hooking the audience and then following through with the rest of whatever you do want to say within that story. And I think that the beginning was really hooked very nicely. Instead of starting with this conversation that does lead into the battle, we are mid-battle, and then we get bits of the reasoning as to why these two are fighting later, which I think was a really good good tactic in not only hooking your audience but also keeping them engaged with the piece throughout.
I did find it notable that it seems like these gods are pretty like down to earth in their power, right?
Hiru, they're not like extremely powerful.
Like Hiru is taking control of this guide. I'm sure she kind of could just take control of any human she wants, basically, unless that they were magically protected. But she doesn't like turn her host into a demigod, right? We don't get that impression anyway. Although who knows what she would do, like in this little battle or brawl that she might have with one of his Lord Kalgor's servants. I wonder how that would go. Then again, maybe his servants aren't just humans either. They might be like empowered in some way too. So maybe there would be a reason for it to be very much like matched. But it seems like these two slightly evil gods, not extremely evil, but just like a little bit, you know, slightly, negative things in the world evil are up to stuff. And I want to know what Hiro's long-term plan is.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, pretty much like after reading this entry, it makes me excited to see where the story is going. There's a lot more complexity happening here. The characters are already pretty well established, especially in light of the previous entries where we spent so much time with these main two of them just going back and forth, which I really like. So yeah, pretty much like after reading this, it gets me excited to see what else can come from this universe.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get into the rest of the listeners submitted stories.
Of course. So best section of Do the Right Thing, listeners submitted story section. We just want to say thank you to everyone who did submit a story. So thank you very much to Matt Said Words and Jarby Jazz.
All right.
And the story we will be talking about first is by Matt Set Words with 7, Caregiver and Caretaker.
Yeah. What's great is the stories that we were submitted this week are all continuations of ongoing stories. And I think that's really neat that y'all are staying committed to it throughout this NaNoWriMo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all are doing it for specifically that, but I think this is a great way to practice your NaNoWriMo skills, and it's nice seeing all these updates with these stories. Yeah. But this one is with the Haunted Hotel. This time we are back. So the last episode, the story that we read, it's part of that series where this hotel has been snowed in, and we go back to the proprietor of the hotel, Otto, as we sort of just go through his perspective of what's going on at this moment, right? He is clearly very, very anxious. He just is thinking about what is happening in that room. We get this parenthesis right at the beginning. In room 313, we get a parenthesis of don't think about it. So he's worried about what's going on with Travis and Scott. But we get through the rest of the hotel and how it seems like a lot of people aren't taking this seriously, even though they're like snowed in. But he's like doing his best, and he's also like getting old. But essentially all of this comes down to he's extremely nervous about what's going on in that room, and he wants to give them a call to find out, but also is too scared to do that.
I really enjoy this entry in this Wire story, because it is 100% separated from the previous story that we have been seeing, but it is related to it. So I like how we're getting a different perspective of it, especially from this character Otto, who we saw, I think it was issue 3 of this series. So I like how we're bringing that character back, and we get to understand a lot more of what they think and their struggles within this haunted hotel. I just really like how this is coming at the story from a different angle. I enjoy how it's acting to slowly wrap up the events of the story, and simply I feel by him wanting to sort of check in on this room so much will probably lead him to discovering Scott's body in the room, and maybe Travis would still be there.
I feel that like not a ton happens in this little section. I felt like maybe having something more revealed about the original like mystery mm-hmm. might have been a good place for that. For example, like if we he was to look at the newspaper clippings or something and think about what happened in the aftermath of that. Like, I don't know if he was around during that time or not. But his sort of like the main thing that's conveyed during this is his worry for the other characters. And I think just having a little bit more to learn about what the situation is would have been good. Mm-hmm. But this is still, I really do like the characterization of Otto's difficulties, both with his age and with these, the Karens that are currently at the hotel. It seems like that was the main issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you very much to Mess at Words. And our final story for this week is by Jarby Jazz with Bed, Basement, and Beyond. Part one.
So this is part one, but I'm pretty sure it's in connection to the rest of the series with the mm-hmm. Fleshcrafters. Last time an assassin was hired to kill a family, and here we have a family getting killed. So
nice.
we have Leonard is carrying these two children and trying to get them out of the house. We're told through one of the kids' perspectives, and through her perspective, we sort of get her sort of naivety as she's like sort of uncomprehending and or just trying to understand like what's happened, where like that blood came from that might have been her mom's, mm-hmm. why Leonard is talking about her father in the past tense, but they're about to escape basically when the assassins comes out of nowhere, takes out Leonard and is just like taunting the two children, and like pulling them by their hair, and she's like trying to take charge, like calling herself Lady Jacqueline now, but they're not able to do much, and it really seems like they're about to get like tortured and killed for the fun of this mm-hmm. assassin. And of course he gets what he's coming, what's coming to him. You know, if you don't just kill them right away, you're gonna get bad things happen to you. And the younger sibling, I think, basically unlocks or does some magic powers, basically, and uses her powers to take out the assassin. Or maybe it's a both of the children, and sort of like crunch him with telekinesis, I think, is sort of what happens.
Yeah, but I really love how the prose within the story is really colored by Jacqueline's perspective on these events. I think it was a smart choice to choose a narrator that is inherently naive, so that we're able to sort of ask a lot of questions with them, which allows us to get deeper within this setting. And yeah, I also like how this works within the wider Flesh Crafters world. One thing that I really enjoy is how the pros are laid out on the page, how like pretty much there isn't a single paragraph, really. Mostly it's just quick sentences, which works really well to sort of quicken the pace of this moment, really, really adding to the tension, letting us know that we should be very worried. We should probably be more hyper-focused on this moment as it's sort of flying by us, which I thought was a really nice touch, and it really aided in the fear that Jacqueline and probably feel, that Jacqueline and Leonard probably feel within this moment. So really, there were a lot of good things happening within this story. And it ends in a place to where you know that it's not over. That there's probably going to be a second assassin or a third one. But I still do enjoy where the story begins and leaves us off.
I think there was an issue a couple times where I felt I wasn't getting quite as much description as I needed to fully understand the scene. When they are like escaping up until that point, it's fine, right? We don't really have to get all of the details of what the like house looks like or what all what the three characters look like. But once they are at the tunnel and then this assassin comes out and there's some action happening where like Leonard gets basically like tossed away. I'm pretty sure it seems like he's been killed, but he might not be. And we sort of, I think there's an issue where we stay in Jacqueline's thoughts a little bit too much. Where we just like hear her like articulated thoughts rather than also what she's like looking at. And we have a voice spoke from above. His voice sounded weird. Like, that's great. The description of the voice is wonderful. But we don't get to see the assassin voice standing above, right? Or is he is he standing on the second floor? Is he, hanging from the ceiling? Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. And the same thing with the very end. The power, actually, upon a reread, I don't think it's telekinesis. I think they, like, empower Leonard, I think. Oh. Yeah, because it says that Leonard gripped his head, and he's the one that rips the guy's jaw off. Yeah, I'm wondering if, they killed Leonard, and then they brought him back with their power. And I just wasn't sure, and I felt just a little bit more of physical description of, where these characters are, how they're positioned and such, I think would have been all I need to fully get that picture.
Yeah, definitely just going into the nitty-gritty and painting this picture to a certain extent to where the audience can definitely latch onto those details and finish the picture for you, definitely.
Yeah, my main critique. I still very much enjoyed the story. I'm interested now that the assassin's been killed, if this is going to reflect upon the weird patchwork master that is the rival of this family, and how they're going to interact with all of the business with the Fleshcrafters.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much to Jarby Jazz for submitting your story. And if you want to be like all of these wonderful writers and submit your story to Do the Right Thing, you can do that by posting it on Reddit @/Do the Right Thing. All you have to do is sit down for 30 minutes and write a complete short story using 3 or 4 randomly generated words.
If you want to see the words as soon as they come out, the best place to do that would be on Twitter @RightThingCast. You can follow us there. You can hit that notification bell and get the notification as soon as the prompt comes out, which I'm just about to release right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, you could also go onto our Discord where we have our little community going on. You can get a reminder every, I think we have it set for Thursdays to get a reminder to write your story before the deadline. You can talk about your stuff there, and it's all free to join at doofmedia.com/discord.
Exactly. And if you want to support us and everything else happening at Doof Media, you can do that by donating to the Doof Media Patreon. All you have to do is donate $10 or more per month to get access to exclusive bonus content, including our most recent episode of Doof Over, which should be coming out fairly soon.
Yeah. We also, there's the Doof After Dark series that is going on, also part of the bonus content, where we all just, the talks that we have right before our podcast, or like right in the middle of it, that's too much of a tangent, we've been cutting that out and putting it onto this feed for y'all to listen to, because it's just too much unrelated to our shows, but it's still a good talk. I also want to plug the Doofcast. If you haven't listened to Doofcast in a while, they've covered a ton of fantastic movies in the last little bit. We've got they're doing a Deconstructing Director series over David Cameron movies, so a lot of really fun movies. Yesterday Judgment Day was released. Also, they've covered Ex Machina, they've covered Aliens. Not that Ex Machina is a David Cameron movie, but they also covered The Terminator, they covered Dune just a bit ago. A ton of stuff that have been really, really enjoyable to listen to. Remind me what the theme is.
Yeah, so the theme for next week is, in their words, basically, we want you to write a story that is where the prose are heavily influenced by a certain character. Could be first person, could be a third person that hops into the main character's head and displays their thoughts. But just make sure that whatever story you do write next week is influenced through the perspective of a certain character.
That's right.
And yep. And the words that will be helping you to write your story next week are thigh, ideal, lily, and attitude.
I almost re-rolled the words after I saw thigh, because I was like, that is very evocative, especially when thigh paired with ideal and attitude. I don't know.
Has attitude and ideal thighs. Her name was Lily.
That's right. There you go. That's your story, Jarvis. You're cut ahead of the game. So a thigh is the upper part of a leg. They are can be
delicious,
thought of as very attractive. And also chicken thighs are very delicious. Is that the drumstick?
The drumstick? No. The drumstick is just the leg. The thigh is the upper leg. So the drumstick is like a leg and calf.
Is the drumstick just a calf?
Basically.
Really? No. What I think I'm picture a chicken leg for me, all right? Picture like a live chicken's leg, right? The like their shins and the whole like bottom part of their body is just like a little stick. There's no meat on that. That's not there's no way.
But the part that the stick connects to, there's meat there. And then that part connects to the thigh part.
I'll have to look at a an anatomy drawing of chicken anatomy. Of a chicken. So, yeah. I don't think there's really anything else.
No.
Except ideal. For again, there can be also viewed as very attractive. You can write NSFW stuff, but it makes it harder to read on the podcast. Just again, a warning about that. Ideal is the best version of something that exists. So the reason is, like, when you have an idea, when you have the concept of something, the optimal form, that is what the ideal is, which is almost never reachable in reality.
Oh, of course. People have ideals, which are desires for themselves. People have ideal foods, ideal people that they want to be around, just like as you said, yeah, it is the best optimal version of anything.
Lily is one a name, but it is a name named after the flowering plant that grows upon the top of bodies of generally fresh water. They're known for having frogs jumping on them. They're also very, very beautiful. I don't know if you've ever seen the flowers on the lily pad. They're just gorgeous and they're enormous. They're a very nice plant. They're one of my favorite plants just to like have in an image right next to ivy. Ivy is so good. Love ivies. Mm. And the last one is attitude, which is the inclination that someone has toward the world or maybe toward another person. I think, does it have any other like non-human interpretations? I think there is. Or maybe I'm just thinking of altitude.
Yeah, you're thinking of altitude. Typically, other things can have a attitude, like a cat or a dog, but that is also, that's, you know, always through the guise of them having human-esque emotions and wants. So typically the word is, focused around human.
Yeah, so you can have a bad attitude, which means that you are sort of being confrontational. Or you can have a good attitude, which is that you're being positive and such. Mm-hmm. I think also, attitude can refer to, like, your body posture as well. That's less common now. And also, I think when someone just says attitude, they do usually refer to, like, you've got an attitude. It's a bad attitude, not a positive one.
Yeah, it's rarely positive. But all right, Alexander, tell me, what story are you going to write next week?
I'm going to write a story about a girl named Lily who had a bad attitude. She's just causing such a ruckus in her school, and she was just not being the ideal student, and they put her in school jail, but it would not stop her because she had these thunder thighs, not derogatory, complimentary, and she just kicked down that door explosively, and then she led a revolution because she's actually the main character in like a Hunger Games-esque dystopian story.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, that's kind of tight. How her journey led her to being divergent.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So my story next week is going to focus around this study that was taken that says that chickens actually exhibit human-esque emotions, to where each chicken actually has a different attitude, with some are better bred to be delicious food, as you know, drumsticks, breast, thighs, and others are more suited to pop out eggs, but the ideal chicken has a mixture of both, a mixture of delicious flesh but really engorged eggs. And this specific study focused on Lily, which was a genetically altered chicken that ended up being three times the size of a normal chicken, and really just following her journey through laying eggs and becoming delicious food for KFC.
That's wonderful. You know, so when you said chickens have attitudes, right, with human emotions, where I thought you were going to go with that is that we would use them for their human emotions. For example, you know what would be very economical for a sitcom? If they didn't have to pay their live studio audience and instead just had a bunch of chickens doing the laughter because they're all amused chickens.
At everything, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. You can have them as cheerleaders. You could have them as call center operators.
Yeah, you can have them as tow truck drivers.
Tow truck drivers, bouncers. Just like, but like, not just one chicken. Obviously, you'd have to have like a bunch of chickens in a trench coat. A coop of chickens in a trench coat. A bouncer of chickens.
Well, also, no, that does breed even more problems, because, like, do these chickens have rights in an agency?
Oh, no.
Like,
I mean, no, of course not. No, of course not.
So they're like a fourth class.
Yeah, a fourth class. Yeah. And so the right chicks. Thing to do would be to lead the revolution via chickens. I think I played a video game about that. They were chickens in space, and they were leading a revolution, yeah.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
It was actually a pretty good game.
That would be the right thing to do. Yes.
That would be the right thing called Chicken Blaster or something.
Chicken Clock, something like that. Yeah, space Chicken Blaster.
That's right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.